Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. That was just such a treat to get to talk with Dr. Stephen Barr. If you know anything about Catholics and science, he really is a big, giant figure, and also in helping people of faith to understand the proper place of science in all that we do. And it was just a great, great honor and pleasure to get to speak with him, as it is this hour to get to talk with Dr. Jared Stout, who is currently the director of content for Exodus 90, now called Exodus. He's a wonderful writer and speaker, and we love it when he's a guest here with us. Dr. Stout, thanks for being here.
Thanks so much for having me back. It's a pleasure.
So Exodus 90 is the retreat part, right? Or the, I don't know if you call it a retreat, but the action part.
Yeah, so Exodus began with these 90 days of renewal, this journey to freedom, through prayer, asceticism, fraternity. And the reason why we're calling ourselves Exodus is because we offer content for men all year round at this point.
Yeah.
But the 90 days lead up to Easter.
Okay. Oh, I see. All right. We're going to talk about Advent this hour, and that's actually strangely puzzling to Catholics. Why does Advent give us trouble, Dr. Stout?
Well, you know, because we know about Lent, you give something up. You know, you don't eat meat on Fridays. It's et cetera. And so we're out in the desert with Christ for these 40 days, preparing for Easter. And then it's like Advent. Well, what do we do? Hang up Christmas decorations and you know, bake cookies? Is that what Advent is? And, you know, I hear all the time, Advent is not a penitential season. It's not a penitential season. And that's true in this sense that it's in canon law. It is no longer an obligatory penitential season. But it arose actually in imitation of Lent. And originally, it was 40 days. So in the West, we often called it St. Martin's Fast because it would begin after Martin's Miss Day. So it's like November 11th, and it would get started up right after the feast. And in the Byzantine churches, they still do that. And they'll call Advent St. Philip's Fast or the Nativity Fast. And it still has those full 40 days, just like Lent. And even, I mean, just over 100 years ago, there was still an obligation to fast and abstain from meat on Wednesdays and Fridays throughout Advent. So even in recent history, it was an obligatory penitential season.
Okay. So it does sometimes feel like being Catholic used to be harder. I don't feel like if it does seem like something happened.
It's hard in a different way now.
Well, that's a good point. Yes. But do you know what I mean? Like there used to be the fast before Sunday Mass was started at midnight the night before, I think. And then, I don't even remember. I think that was gone by the time I was receiving communion. And then,
there are 3 hours in the 50s. Yeah.
There used to be more significant fasting during Lent. When they went to Mass, women used to have to wear a piece of tissue on their head, or that was what it looked like as a child.
Some kind of covering. And if you didn't have one, then the sisters would come up and they would put something on your head, even if it was a tissue.
I'm not trying to get women to have to cover their heads. I'm not. I'm just saying. These things add up, and there seems to be. Are we in a particularly lax period of Catholic practice?
Hands down.
Hands down. All right.
There has ever been in the history of the church.
Ah.
I mean, we're talking about Advent as an imitation of Lent, but Lent is not even an imitation of itself any longer.
Right.
Because Lent is 40 days of fasting. That is what it is, right? From the beginning. And now we have obligatory fasting 2 days, but you can still have three meals.
I don't even understand that at
all. That's not fasting.
No. Yeah. Well, first of all, it's a math problem. Like these two can't equal that one. And first of all, that's putting me off right there. Just give me something to do. I don't need a math problem. But even if once you do the math, you're like, it's basically what I eat every day. Like it's not that hard.
That's right. And people are willing to do difficult things. So they'll go to the gym or they'll fast for their health. Yeah. When it comes to the faith, I think this is a losing proposition. Oh, no. We're not going to ask you to do anything. Don't worry. It's not hard. You know, it's not demanding oh, well, okay, thanks. I'll go to the gym then, you know? And I think this is why men have been drawn to Exodus. Because even look at Advent. What are we doing for Advent? Well, part of it is that we're fasting and abstaining from meat on Wednesdays and Fridays, just like we used to do during Advent just over 100 years ago. And so we are calling men to take the faith more seriously. And I think just following even along our app throughout Advent, there is a focus, right? Every day we're reading from the prophets, we're looking at expecting Christ. What is Advent really about? It's expectation. It's true. You're not out in the desert with Christ as he was, you know, fighting through temptation. It does have a different character. It's like a joyful penance within Advent. You're like, wait a second, that's an oxymoron, a joyful penance.
It is for me.
It's kind of like, I would say, pregnancy, right? You know, there's so many difficulties during pregnancy. I mean, I hear this from my wife, right? Of course. What do I know about that? But anyway, it's what I hear. It's what I observe, that there's so many difficulties, but it's joyful because you're doing it, you know, in expectation of the birth of the baby. And I would say it's the same thing with Advent, that we really do need to focus to say we're preparing for something. And it is a childbirth, right? You know, we're preparing for this, and we are giving up things to focus, right? You know, to say, okay, I am going to put away some distractions, which is hard to do because, you know, in our pseudo kind of Advent, this early Christmas season, there's actually all these distractions coming in. It seems like maybe more than usual with Christmas parties and all these holiday movies and, you know, it is this time of baking, et cetera. And so sometimes there's more distractions, but to say, I'm going to enter into silence, so that I can long for the Savior, I can focus on his coming, and that I'm not going to indulge in, you know, all of the sweets and everything. I'm going to save them for the moment of the arrival so that it really is a moment of joy and celebration.
888-318-7884 is the number, 888-31-TRUTH. Dr. Jared Stout is our guest. You are welcome to call with your questions about Advent, 888-318-7884. So I suppose if Advent started, I mean, if the point of Advent from its beginning was to be a kind of imitation of Lent, that would suggest that at some point Christmas started to be thought of as the equivalent of Easter, that it's something you should be preparing for. I mean, Easter is always the feast, you know, the great feast. From the year after the first Easter, Easter has always been the central feast of the church's year. But Christmas must have upped its game at some point in order to get a penitential season before it.
Yeah, and the origins are somewhat obscure, but I think we can say that they're there with some indication, at least from the 5th century, and they get clearer and clearer as we go on. Mm-hmm. And it is true that Christmas was somewhat of a late bloomer compared to Easter in terms of feast days.
Yeah.
Right? We had actually the Epiphany a little bit earlier, and the Epiphany has always been very closely connected to Christmas. But there are indications of Christmas being celebrated in Rome pretty early on at the end of December, which was the winter solstice day at that time, right? So now we would say the winter solstice is the 21st. But I'm very confident on the fact that Christmas was put on that date because it was the winter solstice. And John the Baptist's birth in the summer on June the 24th was the summer solstice day. And that's why we would say, like, the vigil of his feast is Midsummer's Eve, because the Midsummer's Day was the summer solstice, the 24th. And, you know, we always say it's that the whole thing about, you know, that he must increase and I must decrease. And so that after the summer solstice, the days get shorter, and after the winter solstice,
the days get longer. Yeah. Again, 888-318-7884 is the number. Dr. Jared Stout is our guest. We're talking about Advent. So, the thing about Advent now, too, is that there's a kind of total cultural acceptance that the Christmas season is right now. We are in the Christmas season. So there's actually a conflict between what almost everybody recognizes as the Christmas season and what the church calls the Christmas season.
Yeah, it was funny. I was talking with the bishop a couple of weeks ago, and I said, what advice do you have for people who are at Christmas parties in Advent? How can they maintain an Advent spirit? And he hesitated, and he's like, well, my diocese has its Christmas party during Advent. Uh-huh. So, oh, you're one of the culprits then. No, yeah. there is something about, okay, I will say this. There is something beautiful about the fact that as we are preparing for the birth of Jesus, and we're putting ourselves in the place of Israel, expecting the Savior, longing for the Savior, at least we can say that a lot of people are focusing on the birth of Christ. Now, yes. They might be focused on snowmen and elves and things like that. Okay. But even still, underneath all of this, you can hear it in the music. You can see it in Christmas cards and even stamps you get from the post office.
Right.
You know, the reason is there, you know, even if you have to dig through a couple of layers. And the birth of Christ, you know, that's where we get our years from. You know, the fact that we're going into 2024, it's from the birth of Christ. That's how we keep our time. And everybody says it's the most wonderful time of the year. So there is something, right? You know, as we are doing our spiritual preparations, that we can be a witness in the midst of all of this and just trying to point people, you know, I think back to the manger and say, yeah, this is why we're giving gifts. This is why we are doing all of these things.
It's funny because I think I saw you, Darren, today. We have the manger scene out front, and there's no baby Jesus in the manger scene here at Catholic Answers. And Darren was walking across the lobby, and if I have this right, the delivery guy was like, you're missing baby Jesus. And then Darren explained to him why baby Jesus wasn't there. And then I think you called the guy a heretic and threw him out. Is that what happened? No, maybe that last part not. I actually, let's talk about that a little bit when we come back, about Advent as a time to be grumpy with people. That does seem to be a growing thing, making it a time of contention. 888-318-7884 is the number. If you have questions about Advent, you don't have to be Catholic. You don't have to be Christian. Anybody can call. If you've got a question about Advent, the liturgical season we are in currently in the Catholic Church, you are welcome to call 888-318-7884.
There's only one Catholic Answers Live.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite monks of Wyoming. Delicious mystic monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All mystic monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase mystic monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Saints are the heroes of the Catholic faith. They serve as examples for all Catholics, showing us how to lead a more satisfying, more spiritual life in communion with our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. View our comprehensive documentation of saints who serve as theologians and doctors of the Church. Visit EWTN.com and click Catholicism. EWTN is the global Catholic network.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Jared Stout is our guest. If you want to know what he's up to now, you can check it out. Check out what they're doing at Exodus, formerly referred to as Exodus 90. Dr. Stout is now the director of content for Exodus. And that's one of the things that they are providing more and more of, content for men on a daily basis that will help you to persevere and faithfully live your Christian faith. If you'd like to talk with Dr. Stout about Advent, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. We were talking a little bit about the feast day, that Christmas is the big feast, and we have these big feasts. And really now, today, Christmas and Easter are the big feasts. That was not always the case. Always Christmas has been, but there was a time when the feast of John the Baptist was a major feast of the Church, no longer even remembered by a lot of people in June. So talk to us about Christmas as a feast and Advent as a part of the way the Church prepares for feasts.
Well, I mentioned that, you know, the Epiphany is an older feast. And actually, in the Middle Ages and up until recently, the 12th night was the main day to celebrate Christmas publicly, right? You know, so you would have the Feast of Christmas as, of course, this main liturgical celebration of Christ's birth. This is the whole 12 days of Christmas, right? So you celebrate throughout the 12 days, but there would be a big public party. And, you know, of course, all the wassailing and all of that on the 12th night, the eve of the Epiphany. So Christmas really gained in prominence, you know, I would say after the legalization of Christianity became more and more of a prominent feast. And Advent was a little bit later coming together than Lent. And it really is part of this logic that anything important requires preparation. So if Easter really is the number one feast of the year, right, then we enter into this very intense preparation, this time out in the desert with Christ. But it's the same with Advent, even though this has a different character, right, that joyful expectation. I think really the joyful mysteries are so important to meditate upon during the time of Advent. But even in this joy, there's still some penance, right? This joyful asceticism of I'm looking forward to something, right? I'm pushing yes. through the difficulties because I'm going somewhere, you know, right. I'm journeying, you know, almost like the wise men, right? Christmas becomes this kind of search, right? I am looking for this fulfillment of my desires, my deepest desires. And the star is a kind of symbol of that, that Christ is here. He is the answer. And everyone throughout the country is focused on him in some way, but they might be just like all the people in Bethlehem, you know, no room in the inn, right? Everyone's busy, just like the time of the census and right. you know, Jesus is out in the cave, you know, being born in a stable. And we don't want Advent and Christmas to be like that, that everything is so busy that Christ gets lost. You know, in the Middle Ages, people generally only received communion three times a year. And that was at Easter, Pentecost, and then also at Christmas. And so those preparatory seasons were very important because you were preparing for one of your few communions throughout the entire season. So all of Lent, you were getting ready to receive the Lord at Easter. All of the Easter season as well, you were getting ready for that Pentecost communion. And, you know, even if we're receiving communion throughout Advent, I think, you know, that idea is really significant. When I go to Mass, midnight Mass or Christmas Day, that I am going to receive the newborn Christ anew in the Eucharist, that he's giving his flesh for me now. The Word is becoming flesh for me, and I am meant to be like that manger, which is kind of like the Ark of the Covenant, right? You think of the Old Law, you know, they put the tablets, you know, within the Ark of the Covenant, and you have the cherubim who are guarding it. And you come to the manger and you have the ox and the ass on both sides of it, almost like they're the new watchers here. And I am approaching the Holy of Holies when I approach that manger. And unlike the shepherds and the wise men who just come and do homage to the newborn king, when I receive him in the Eucharist, he's coming into me. And this is really the goal of the incarnation. It is a new creation. That Jesus wants to change the world, right? You know, the Jews wanted him to beat the Romans. That's what they were looking for, right? In the Messiah, we're going to establish the kingdom. And he did, of course, establish the kingdom. But he said, I'm going to establish it in you, right? And so when you receive the Eucharist and the newborn Christ comes into you at Christmas, he is staking a claim for the kingdom in you, and he wants to change everything else through you.
Wow, that's actually a very exciting way to think of it, because it gives that relationship with Christ a dimension of that's important for others. It's not just a me and Jesus. I got him, and I'm keeping him. It gives it that other dimension of this means something in his great plan.
Really, it's being sent on mission. You know, my most recent book is How the Eucharist Can Save Civilization. And some people laugh at that title, right? You know, oh yeah, the Eucharist can save civilization.
No.
But, you know, I mean, it really can, because everything that you need is there. Everything that God intends for the world is there. I mean, what more could he give? He's giving his only son. But his plan unfolds in and through us. And then it's our job to take this gift into the world.
888-318-7884, the number. I am about to go to calls. Do not worry, callers. I am coming to you. And if you haven't called yet, there are lines open, 888-318-7884. But I want to ask you about one other thing, and that is the kind of temptation that we have to be grumpy because other people aren't doing it right. That, you know, someone's – I never have thought this was a part of – an important part of the evangelizing life. Someone says, Merry Christmas, and you say, it's not Christmas yet, it's still Advent. Christmas, you say Merry Christmas. Somehow that seems to me a counter witness to the person of Jesus. Maybe I'm just overly sensitive, but I don't get that. And then we had the Christmas wars, and I think, frankly, the Christmas people won the Christmas wars, because when you go to the store, a lot of times people say, they don't say Happy Holidays as like they used to. You do get the Merry Christmas. You know, you get whatever the person wants. It almost seems like businesses gave up and they let the employees say what they want. And now a lot of them say Merry Christmas. But I don't know about conceiving of Christmas as a war either. So I just want to throw that out to you. What do you make of all that I just said?
Yeah, I would say that, especially if somebody says Merry Christmas, I mean, the idea is, yes, may you have a Merry Christmas. I mean, you don't even have to say it that way, but just Merry Christmas, that's what that means.
Right.
Have a Merry Christmas. That should be our kind of blessing for everyone as we see them. But I would say that if you are a mother or father, the goal should be to help your family to make a good Advent. To say that, you know, we are not celebrating yet. I mean, but we are in a way, right? Because we have a beautiful tradition in Advent. And even look at Advent carols, you know, and there's the whole tradition of lessening carols that the Anglicans have still, you know, really promoted. But, you know, reading the prophecy, especially in the book of Isaiah, you know, you have the Jesse tree, which has become very popular, and that helps families to go through the story of salvation history. And you can be like my family. You know, Jesse tree, you're supposed to go out and get some branches so that it doesn't have any leaves on it. And then that's a great contrast with the Christmas tree. We just put out a Christmas looking, you know, tree, and we just put the Jesse ornaments on that. And then, you know, then we decorate it on Christmas Eve, the traditional day to trim the tree. But, you know, we're actually focused on the coming of Christ, and we're singing the great hymns of Advent. And that beautiful music. And, you know, we have the Advent wreath in the home. And so we're actually looking forward to something. But when it comes to your friends and neighbors and family, I mean, you can kind of let them in on the secret and just say, hey, you know, do you want to come and, you know, this is so exciting, right? We can go to Handel's Messiah, or I was going to say, just sing some Advent carols with us, right? Everybody's going to sign up for that, right? You know, but come to our house and do something more preparatory, right? And part of this is, of course, you are getting ready for the celebration. There are things that need to be done. But if you're not celebrating already, right, that's part of that expectation. So, yeah, I mean, you should not be grumpy to people. I agree with that. But we can be a good witness and not be a jerk, too.
I like that tagline. That should be the Jared Stout tagline. You can be good witness and not be a jerk. I guess that's the depth of my theological ability, is that being grumpy seems not to be what we're called to. But that's...
It doesn't seem like joyful expectation, does it?
No. 888-318-7884, the number. I must say, too, the word Mary seems to me... We don't use it anywhere except in relation to Christmas. We never say... And it is the perfect word for Christmas, because... That is what we should, those of us who have met the Lord Jesus, there is a perfect response to that is a merriness, a certain, not a hilarity, not a goof, you know, a merry. It makes you merry to have this relationship with Jesus and to have the hope that he gives you.
And Joseph Pieper has often said that, you know, We have lost the ability to enter into festivity, right?
Oh, did he?
He wrote about that numerous times, right? Like In Tune with the World was his famous book on festivity. And I think part of that is that if you're always overwhelmed with images and sounds and treats, then there's nothing special, mm-hmm. right, when the day actually comes. But if you're actually able to enter into festivity, and the heart of that is the Mass, right? Merry Christmas, right? If you actually go to Mass and it's a big deal, you extend that into the celebration, right? And you're really able to enter into it.
Jared Stout, our guest, 888-318-7884, our number. We're talking about Advent. If you've got Advent questions, comments, 888-318-7884 is the number to call. Want to get right to the core of Christ's saving message? Want a roadmap for living the life Christ calls you to? It's time to look again at the Beatitudes. In his new book, Heart of the Gospel, How the Beatitudes Show Us God's Plan for Happiness, Father Sebastian Walsh demonstrates compellingly how these eight declarations make up the foundation, the essence, and the final goal of Jesus' teaching. Heart of the Gospel illuminates the scriptural passages from which we get the Beatitudes, explains the significance of their wording, their order, and their timing in Jesus' ministry. And it draws out edifying parallels and connections with salvation history and the lives of the saints. Most importantly, Father Walsh offers wise counsel from his own work as a priest and teacher to help you live the Beatitudes in your own life. Order your copy of Heart of the Gospel today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
If you're not a Bible scholar, the full message of how the Sunday Mass readings fit together can be tough to comprehend. Apologist Carlo Broussard is here to help. Join Carlo every Friday for the Sunday Catholic Word Podcast. In each episode, he unpacks the scripture readings for that Sunday and brings them all together so you can better understand and defend the faith. Visit SundayCatholicWord.com to subscribe. That's SundayCatholicWord.com.
Our Lord needs articulate defenders of the truth to spread the joy of the Catholic faith. Catholic Answers Monthly Giving Club, Society 315, helps you fulfill the call in 1 Peter 3:15 to always be prepared to make a defense for the hope that is in you. For as little as $10 a month, you'll help Catholics grow in faith, bring lapsed Catholics home, and lead non-Catholics to the truth. Go to CASociety315.com and join today.
Do you have an important prayer need?
We'll pray with you tomorrow on Take Two with Jerry and Debbie.
On most of these EWTN stations.
And now back to Catholic Answers Live with Cy Kellett.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. We have some Advent decorations up in the studio. We finally got some of our Advent decorations up. We have this red Advent hat here. We have the Advent stockings, the Advent tree. But there'll be probably some more Advent decorations going up as we go. We're talking about Advent this hour, and your questions on Advent, or you want to share some of your traditions, get Dr. Jared Stout's take on them. It's whatever you'd like to talk about. If you want to talk about Advent, whether you're Catholic or not, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. And that we were having a discussion at the break about Dickens's A Christmas Carol, which apparently, I am told, C.S. Lewis did not like because it wasn't explicitly Christian. And G.K. Chesterton did like because he thought it was appropriate Christmas story. I wanted to get your take on that on the air.
Of course, Christmas almost died in England under Puritan rule, right? It was even banned for a while.
Right.
And Merry England itself had died, right? We were talking about the term merriment, and that had really become eclipsed. And, you know, what's so powerful about the Christmas Carol is that it's not simply about merriment for merriment's sake. Scrooge has to go through a conversion, and that is coming to care for others before himself. And so the conversion he goes through is charity. And that's the heart of Christmas, right? Because Jesus came at Christmas to give of himself. He emptied himself for us. And when Scrooge is able to do that, then he is able to be merry. And we were talking about Joseph Pieper and festivity, right? Why are we not able to enter into festivity today? Well, it's because we don't have the penitential seasons to prepare for the feast. And so there has to be fasting before the feasting. And so Scrooge has to be able to let go and to actually give of himself and his possessions for others so that he can experience the joy of Christmas.
And he does genuinely, that's the thing about it, is he does genuinely that experience the joy of Christmas by the welcoming of charity into his heart, even if there's not explicit naming of the person of Jesus as charity incarnate. The Dickens succeeds, I think, in the book. Like this is about what it's like to have charity rekindled in the heart.
You know, C.S. Lewis liked very explicit allegories, but you could view the Christmas Carol as an allegory, right? Of unfolding to a secular people what Christmas actually means. And if it means dying to yourself to come to a love of another so that you can experience the joy of Christmas as a feast, well, then it works.
Yes, and probably why it's been made as a movie a billion times. And there's not a single really good movie about Mary and Joseph. Like, there's not one. And that was pointed out to me, I think, by Stephen Greidanis years ago, and I'm still baffled by that. No one has made a great Mary and Joseph movie. As a matter of fact,
I always laugh too. Like the strenuous journey to Bethlehem when you're, you know, like almost getting captured by who knows who and going across this raging river. And it's like, well, actually she just did that like 6 months before when she went to visit Elizabeth, you know, it really isn't that far.
She was a hardy traveler, Mary. She was a hardy traveler. You couldn't stop her. 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. We're talking about the season of Advent with Dr. Jared Stout. Dr. Jared Stout just mentioned before that his latest book is How the Eucharist Can Save Civilization. Tell us about some. There's the first book. What was the name of the first book? Was that back in
that
the option days?
The beer option.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
The beer option, restoring humanity, renewing Catholic schools, and now how the Eucharist can save civilization. I had to redeem myself after the beer option by writing about the Eucharist, you know.
Well, I don't know. Many great things have come from Christian culture, and beer is one of them. The Restoring the Culture book. That's a wonderful book.
Restoring Humanity.
Restoring Humanity. That's the one. Yeah, Restoring Humanity. A collection of essays, as I recall, that are well worth reading. 888-318-7884 is the number. We're talking with Dr. Jared Stout about... Sorry, I don't know what's the matter
with
me.
Have you called worse?
Well, we started talking about beer, and suddenly I can't talk. We're talking about Advent, about the season of Advent. If you have questions about the season of Advent... that you are welcome to call. You talked about that bishop who said the Christmas party comes before Christmas and at the diocese. And I think there are certain logistical reasons for that people get time off, around the end of the year. They're often not around for that whole last week or back. Chris Check, our boss here, he moved the Christmas party to the Feast of the Epiphany. I think actually it's going to be on the 5th this year for scheduling reasons. I don't remember why, but it's on the 5th. And I actually think that people could do this. Like I think more people could invite people to a Christmas party that comes after Christmas. Like, you know, have a Christmas party at your house after Christmas, and we could actually get something started, because I don't think people are going to say no to cookies. I don't think people are going to say no to pie, to wassail, whatever that is. I don't think they're going to. Is that a thing?
It's kind of like the beer option. It's
or,
a Christmas punch.
Or cider or Diet Coke or whatever you're serving. They're not going to say no to that. Like, you could actually, we could get this going, I think, to start making the Christmas
January
season.
January 5th. that's the day. Like you said, you're meeting on the 5th. That's the 12th night day. That was always the biggest day of celebrating with other people for Christmas. So we need to get that going again.
Well, and then the other thing that you could do is you could start giving your presents on that day, because the after Christmas sales would be an insane time to get your presents. Like you could like probably triple the haul because this, things would be so cheap.
I celebrated Christmas in Spain one year, and that's what they did. They did give their presents on the Epiphany in honor of the kings.
Yeah. Well, that was always the Mexican tradition. I remember as a child that in Mexico, but I do think that the power of modern commercial society, it transforms everything. You know, like even you go places where they never even heard of Halloween, and now they're celebrating Halloween because it gets sold to them. And I'm not against free candy. I'm not against any free food whatsoever. But it does seem like this modern kind of, it's almost like a machine, of a consumerist machine that, okay, we're going to sell Christmas everywhere, even in countries where the Three Kings, for example, were the big feast.
And Santa Claus is the ambassador, right?
Yeah. Don't get me started on Santa Claus. Do you have strong feelings about Santa Claus? Yes.
I believe in Santa Claus.
Yeah.
His Saint Nicholas feast day just happens to be earlier in December. Ah, so we put out our stockings for Saint Nick's feast day.
Oh, you do? So the kids get the stockings on those days, or the stockings go out and then
that's
they're filled
we do
later?
The stockings. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I mean, because obviously, I mean, people don't realize that, right? You know, what did Saint Nicholas do? He gave the three girls their dowry down the chimney, right, into their socks or shoes, depending on the variation of the story. And that's where the stockings come from. So that's a great Catholic tradition.
Yes,
and,
it is.
And we need to recover it, you know, in connection with Saint Nick, because he's the patron saint of children. And, you know, some people called it, you know, the boy bishop day. It was, you know, the children would actually dress up like Saint Nick themselves in the Middle Ages. There'd be processions and things. It was a very important day.
I'm going to go to the phones. Don's in Spokane, Washington, listening on Sacred Heart Radio. Don, thank you very much for the call. Go ahead with your question for Dr. Jared Stout.
Yeah, hey, I just heard you guys. I may be off topic here. I just came in at the conversation about the Christmas Carol and G.K. Chesterton's view of it versus C.S. Lewis's view of it. And I just thought, in a way, couldn't it be likened to a parable? I mean, Jesus didn't necessarily say Jesus in the parables or God. He would say things like the kingdom of heaven is like. And so in a way, isn't the movie The Christmas Carol or the story of The Christmas Carol saying, you know, Christmas is like this. This is like Christmas. This is a Christmas-like event. So just want your comments on that. And one last thought was, you guys were just mentioning, you know, Santa Claus. The way, because I'm a convert, by the way. I'm a Protestant convert. My son, Joshua Charles, is the reason why he converted his dad. And the reason why I still kind of like Santa Claus is because in my mind, like the Christmas Carol, you're doing a sacrificial act. You're doing something sacrificial for your children, but not receiving the credit for it. Uh-huh. So it's kind of like, don't let the left hand know what the right hand is doing. You're doing something that benefits others, but you're not receiving credit for it, even though it is absolutely you that's doing it.
All right, I'm going to let Dr. Stout comment, but did you just say Jared Stout is your? Joshua Charles is your son?
Yes.
Nice work.
I'm Joshua Charles' father.
Nice work, Dad. Yeah. Nice work.
Oh, hey, man. I got to be honest. The kid is, you know, I mean, I might have applied some basic direction, but Josh is just the real deal. We used to find that kid at, you know, 11, 12 years old at night, at midnight, with a flashlight under his covers reading. And we used to get upset with him. And a friend of ours said, pick your battles. And we're like, you know what? You're right.
He's one of my favorite scholar, apologists, classical pianists, and there's probably more things that I could say about him. But Dr. Stout, your comments on the comments regarding Santa Claus and A Christmas Carol.
Yeah, I think that's spot on with The Christmas Carol, that it really is trying to capture the essence. And there's so much sappiness when it comes to Christmas and all the stories and the movies and a lot of the songs. And I think we can say that Dickens, he wrote a classic, right? And he was good at that, writing all these classics. But he got to the essence, and I think you're right, in parable-like fashion. But when it comes to Santa Claus, I think we just have to, and this is my opinion now, I mean, he has his place, right? And I would say that as Catholics, we can recover more of the season. So let's put St. Nick back at his feast day on December 6th, where he belongs, and let's do the Santa Claus traditions there. Let's recover that. That's where they come from. And and then let's do the 12th night and the three kings, and let's celebrate all of that. And then let's make Christmas to be about Jesus. And if we're going to give gifts, I think, it's almost like hobbits. That's what I tell my kids, right? When you read Lord of the Rings, the hobbits gave other people presents on their birthday. And that's what I tell my kids about Christmas. Jesus wants you to have these presents for his birthday. But what happens there? December 6th, December 25th, and then you get January 5th into the 6th or 12th night and into the Epiphany. Look at all that. Why wouldn't we want to embrace all of that?
Sure.
Is a great spread right there.
Yeah, and you got the Feast of the Immaculate Conception in there. You could make it a whole, like, it's like two seasons worth. It would be weeks of, you know what? We wouldn't have to feel jealous of Hanukkah anymore, where they get 8 days of presents. We could start, all right, I like this. I like where this is going. Don, it was a pleasure speaking with you. You have a very fine son. If anybody doesn't know who Joshua Charles is, just put Joshua Charles Catholic in your browser, and you'll find very, very fine work on his conversion to the Catholic faith. We got to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more talk of Advent with Dr. Jared Stout right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
It's all about the truth. Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
The most original and exclusive Catholic content is on EWTN Radio.
I don't like looking back. I prefer to look forward and keep moving forward. There's plenty to cover. I do a lot of research and try to dig out the bits and pieces of a life or of an agenda that people don't want to talk about.
The World Over with Raymond Arroyo, Thursday night, 8 Eastern, on EWTN Radio and Television.
The Catechism defines evangelization as the proclamation of Christ and his gospel by word and the testimony of life. But what does that look like in real life? It looks like St. Paul street evangelists out in the public square sharing the good news. We're a Catholic nonprofit that starts conversations by handing out free sacramentals. Then we employ our method of listen, befriend, proclaim, and invite. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. Visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Our number is 888-318-7884. We're talking Advent. You want some suggestions, some ideas, maybe some theology about celebrating Advent? You're welcome to call with your question, 888-318-7884. I like your line of thinking. And is this actually the practice that you and your wife have undertaken with your family, this idea of kind of elongating the season? So you celebrate Advent in anticipation of Christmas, and then you don't just stop on Christmas Day, more happens?
Well, I've heard a lot of people say this, there's the Polish custom to leave your Christmas tree up and sing carols till February 2nd, the presentation. No, they're just the only ones who still do that. It's not Polish. Everyone used to do that.
Oh, really?
The tree would go up and be decorated on Christmas Eve, and then you would leave it up until February 2nd. That's what we do as Catholics, right? When you think of Easter being a 50-day season, right? It's longer than Lent, right? So we had 40 days of fasting,
right?
We feast for even more. And when it comes to Christmas, we have our 3 to 4 weeks of preparation. And then we at least need to celebrate until the Epiphany. All right, so the 12 days go up to Epiphany, so we should take those 12 days seriously. And part of the reason that Twelfth Night was such a big deal is that kicks off Mardi Gras. And so there was this celebratory season from the Twelfth Night. And in Twelfth Night, there are masquerade balls, you know.
Oh, yeah. That.
And then that would go up until, you know, that Tuesday.
Oh, so that was a whole, yeah, celebrate till you're back into penance at
really,
Lent.
That's Epiphany Tide, right? So Epiphany Tide was a time of celebration going up into Lent, towards Lent.
A freakish number of Polish house fires late in January, however. Nah, I just made that up. That's not real.
Gotta be careful, yeah. Don't use real candles at a certain point.
That made no sense. Let's get a dry tree and put some candles on it. You got to have faith to do that. I'm going to head back to the phones. 888-318-7884 is the number if you would like to get in on the conversation. 888-318-7884. Donna's in Kansas listening on Divine Mercy Radio. Donna, glad you're here. Go ahead with your question or comment for Dr. Jared Stout.
Okay, my comment is when we were CYO directors in our parish, the kids all went together and they would put together an Advent book, and we also put together one for Lent. They were always a month long, and what we did, every person in the parish was mentioned in the book at some point in time, whether it was by a poem or by a reading, and all the saints of the day and something about the saint of the day was in that book. And they did Advent angels. And so people had to make angels for somebody whose name they drew out of the hat. And they had to figure out a way all through Advent to get them an angel a day.
So this was the Catholic Youth Organization. Were you talking about when you were a kid, or you were a director of this? I mean, you were
when I was the director of it.
And did you find that this helped young people celebrate the season of Advent as Advent?
Yes, it did. And because when you went through the saints of the day, and you know, we talked about St. Nicholas, but we always said he's the spirit of giving, not the spirit of receiving. And so if you give something to somebody every day and think of them and say a prayer for them, yeah, it...
I thought we lost you, but we didn't lose you. Okay. I just want to get Dr. Stout's response. How does this strike you?
Yeah, I think there's a number of ways that we can try to make Advent more significant. And I like the idea of doing something every day, right? Praying for somebody, doing something for them. Even brings us back to Dickens, right? This getting out of yourself, that spirit of St. Nick, as she was saying. So, you know, unfortunately, Advent is almost like a throwaway season often, right? Because we're so focused on Christmas and we don't know what to do. What should we do? So I allowed anyone. He was like, yeah, here's something we could do every day. That's great. Those are the kinds of things we need to do. That's what we're doing with Exodus, is that we have, you know, Advent meditations every day so we can grow in joyful expectation. And I think there are other, you know, spiritual works out there that we can read during Advent. I recommend reading the prophet Isaiah, so it's not too late to pick that up. So yes, let's start a daily practice for Advent. I think that's great.
Donna, thank you. I appreciate that call.
We also, at the beginning of the book, we explained the Advent wreath and why the candles were the colors that they were and why we lighted them and things like that.
Well, the Advent wreath might be the one thing that's still holding Advent in existence for many families.
Yeah, that's right. And at least, you know, we can say this, as we work through the Advent wreath, almost like an Advent calendar, right? That's another, you know, popular tradition. At least it's pointing us, okay, something is coming, right? You know, and people like to sing, O Come, O Come, Emmanuel. We have the Oa antiphons as we get closer to Christmas. Also, you know, people are coming back to the Ember Days, right? So after the Feast of St. Lucy, and that's another one of the most significant feasts, mm-hmm. this Day of Light, you know, that's what Lucy means, light. And so there's great traditions with candles. And of course, even you want to talk about setting things on fire, right? Wreaths on your head with the lit candles, right? The Scandinavians are good at that, but having also some special treats for her feast day. But then the week following, you have the Ember Days, right? So you have days of particular fasting and penance and prayers, particularly for the clergy, on Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday. And so those are the Quattuor Tempora, the four times of the year that we have for the four different seasons. And that's, you know, something else that can root us in devotions during Advent.
Donna, thank you. Again, appreciate that call. I'm going to go to John. Don't have a location, but we got a caller. So, John, you are welcome. Go ahead with your question for Dr. Jared Stout.
Hi. Yes, John from Rocky Hill, New Jersey. And
John.
I wanted to just confirm, I love the discussion. I think it's a very important discussion. I raised seven children in the church, and we did what was pretty much suggested, and that is we taught about St. Nicholas, and we taught our children that the gifts came, you know, on St. Nicholas Day. So we would get the whole gift thing out of the way by December 6th. And the kids just grew up with that, and they were, you know, it was a big feast, it was a big excitement. And then we went into the Nativity and the Feast of the Nativity, focusing in on Christ and the great gift that God has given us and the gift giver. So it worked, and it was a great tradition. We stayed within the, you know, the tradition, Catholic tradition, and at the same time, kind of tweaked it a little bit. Yeah.
And it didn't bother the kids getting their presents early?
No, they just thought they were special. We kind of raised our kids to be nonconformists anyway, so they just thought that, you know, in our house, you know they were in church on St. Nicholas and church, you know, on the feast of Christmas, the Nativity, and that's just what they grew up with, and it worked out great.
Dr. Stout,
really good.
Oh, I love it, and it's great to hear somebody say, "I did that, and it worked." You know, we didn't pay him, right, to say that. No, I'm just kidding.
No, but we will.
And it makes me think too of, you know, the fact that the vigil days of all the great feasts were also days of penance in the past, and they were days of abstinence from meat. So when I lived in Poland for a year in high school, and it was great to enter into a lot of Catholic traditions during that year. But they would have carp, you know, at the great Christmas Eve meal. But a lot of Catholic countries, including Poland, but you mentioned Mexico earlier, the whole family would go to midnight mass. And then coming out of midnight mass, that would kick off a whole night of celebration. And think how special that is, right? You know, to say that we're staying up because this is so important. Christ was born in the night. And so we are here to greet him. It's like the shepherds, you know, running into the manger in the middle of the night at the command of the angels to that music, right? And so that's what we should have: food, music, dancing, the treats that we were not eating during Advent, and really make it special, and then come back together for that 12th night celebration on January 5th.
John, that's a great call. Thank you very much for calling and sharing that with us.
No problem. Thank you.
Yeah, the midnight mass now is often at 8 p.m., like the, which is actually midnight in a certain sense. I mean, you don't have to be too legalistic about that.
Right?
What's that? Somewhere.
It's midnight somewhere.
Well, the sun is down and it won't be up for a while. So you're in the middle of the night. That's the way I went to a Jesuit school, but
you know, there's the great St. Andrew's Novena prayer. So a lot of people have started doing that. It's a really powerful Novena starting on November 30th. But blessed be the hour in the moment when the Son of God was born of the most pure Virgin Mary at midnight in Bethlehem in piercing cold, you know. But I love blessed be the hour in the moment. And so there's that tradition that Christ was born in the middle of the night, we say at midnight. And especially because of the darkness coming so early in December, it really is that the middle of the night we go and we greet the newborn Savior.
Dr. Jared Stout, thank you. I really appreciate you coming on and talking with us about the season of Advent. Such a misunderstood season and therefore often a missed opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. And Merry Christmas. But anyway, blessed Advent and have a Merry Christmas.
Well, thank you very much. I am almost certain I won't see you between now and then. So I feel just fine saying have a Merry Christmas, you and all of yours. That'll do it for us. Tomorrow we'll do open forum, both hours. Jimmy Akin will be here. I'll probably have some kind of goofy ad to read again from Carrie. And we'll see you then, God willing, right here on Catholic Answers Live.